No retail till June 1st. Never mind the hotels, the resorts. I don't know how these people are going to survive.
At the same time, everybody recognizes that nobody wants to get sick. And nobody wants their customers to get sick or to die because of contact at your facility. That's the balancing act here.
From the coastline to the mountains, New England relies on its tourism economy. But this year, that vital summer season may not happen, and businesses are bracing for the worst. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is an America Amplified call-in special from the New England News Collaborative. This hour, we'll talk about the outlook for the tourism industry in the year of COVID-19, and we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. It's coming up right after this news. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm Jennifer Rooks, host of Maine Public Radio's call-in show, Maine Calling. Every summer, tourists by the millions come to New England to enjoy the coastline, lakes, mountains, cities, and all the attractions and events that make this region special. With the coronavirus pandemic, however, that will likely not be the case this coming season. Today, we're going to talk with people from across New England about the outlook for the region's tourism industry and hear about plans and strategies to make the best of the situation. Joining me, Tracy Michaud, who is chair of the Tourism and Hospitality Program at the University of Southern Maine, and Jamie Trowbridge. He's president and CEO of Yankee Publishing, which includes Yankee Magazine and the Old Farmer's Almanac. Tracy and Jamie, thank you so much for joining us for this special.
Happy to be here.
That's my pleasure.
And this hour, we want to hear your voice as well. Are you planning to travel within New England in the months ahead? Do you have a business that depends on tourism? What are you doing to prepare for what's going to be a very different summer season? You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Or send us an email at americaamplified@nepr.net. Again, americaamplified@nepr.net. Tracy, when we talk about the tourism industry in New England, we're talking about a whole range of businesses, from restaurants to historic sites, high-end resorts to campgrounds, ecotourism, guide service, charters, and so on. But my sense is that most of them, with the exception of maybe some big hotels in the cities and a couple of the casinos, most tourism-related businesses in New England are small businesses, many family-owned. What can you tell us? What do the numbers show us about the nature of New England's tourism sector and then also its economic might?
Yeah, you're correct, Jennifer. Most tourism businesses outside of the bigger cities are small family-owned businesses, many that have been in the family for generations. And based on access to nature, guide services, or access to lakes and mountains and also our heritage. And so this is a huge part of Maine and New England in general. And so the impact is going to be felt very strongly. And the economic impact that we have on the books here for Maine, just as an example, about 1.3 million people in the state and about 37 million visitors coming. And so in 2018, that was about a $4.7 billion impact on the state.
And that's just one of the states in New England, right? Go ahead.
Right. And this is the money going into the pockets of the small businesses. And many of these businesses aren't just small businesses, but they're characterized as micro businesses. And so these are the people that are going to be affected by this pandemic.
I know that even in the best of times, tourism is a bit of a roller coaster. So many things can affect a business: weather, gas prices, the economy in general. And there have been some really tough seasons past. I'm thinking about after 9/11. How is this potentially really bad season different than bad seasons in the past?
Right. Tourism in New England has been going strong for a couple hundred years. And so the industry has seen a lot and been resilient and bounced back from a number of things. But typically, for instance, one of the last big crises we had was around 9/11. And what you saw was the flight industry in particular being very hard hit. People didn't want to fly for a while, and places like New York City in particular saw a little bit of a dip. But other sectors remain strong. What's happening with this pandemic is it's affecting all sectors of the tourism industry, from hotels, restaurants, attractions, everywhere, and not just in one place, but it's all over the world. So we truly are all in this together. And that's very different than some of the other crises that have happened in the past.
Jamie Trowbridge, you've been talking with representatives from throughout the New England tourism industry, and I'm wondering what the overall mood is. Are people feeling frustration, fear, or are they feeling a sense of resolve to make the best of it?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. I mean, you can imagine the frustration they have at being, you know, totally shut down at this time. And so a lot of the energy is around opening up. What will they be like? When will that happen? What will we be permitted to do? And where we're really still starting to see frustration now is among tourism property owners and managers is when those questions are not being addressed by the governing bodies, or they're being addressed in an unsatisfactory way.
There's a challenging tension between wanting to have tourists come so that the economy can at least chug along this summer, but then not wanting tourists to come and bring the virus with them. We've already heard, for example, from Governor Sununu of New Hampshire discouraging travelers from Massachusetts. Jamie, how are the business owners you talk to wrestling with that tension?
Well, in answer to your prior question, that's the really big difference here between, there's a number of big differences, but that's a huge difference between now and previous travel recessions is just this notion of state borders being uncrossable. And I know that the emergency orders from all the different governors don't necessarily say that, but in practice, that is a real concern at this time. If the virus is really much more widespread in southern New England than northern New England, we want to open up northern New England, but what does that mean in terms of spreading the virus? So it's a really tricky thing for the governors to manage, and I know they are coordinating that together. But the other factor here is local residents. So North Conway, New Hampshire, a destination for people from all over New England and from Maine. When people were told, you know, it's all right, go ahead, get outside. Here was this little resort town sort of overwhelmed with traffic from with license plates from other states and local residents sort of being fearful that the disease was coming with them. So it's not just the governing body that has to adjust to whatever the new normal is here. It's the residents, too.
Calling in now, Brian Mulcahy. He and his wife own Rabbit Hill Inn in Waterford, Vermont. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jennifer.
Brian, I know that Vermont hotels and inns are currently closed, and the governor has not yet indicated when you will be allowed to reopen. What does it cost you just to have the building standing there, unoccupied?
Well, for a property like ours, we're a 19-room full-service inn. Just for a property like ours to cover mortgage and insurance and legal liabilities, it costs about $25,000 to $28,000 a month. And those are, you know, despite the fact that we are able to get some PPP money or grant money or something of that nature, it doesn't necessarily cut it.
Are you worried about the survival of the inn if you have significantly fewer guests this year?
You know, we're still remaining very confident that we will survive. It's a scary outlook. We certainly know it's going to be a challenge for us. And we figure that we probably won't be retiring as soon as we wanted to. Let's put it that way.
Mm. When you do reopen, how are you going to make sure guests feel safe at the inn and want to come?
Well, that's a big question that the industry as a whole, especially our type of property, is really grappling with. We're a luxury property, and when people come to us, they're coming to us because they want to be at this destination. We're not just a place to stay. We are the destination. And so we're a high-touch kind of a place, but now we're living in this no-touch paradigm. We're trying to deal with how we're going to meet the need and the expectation of the guest, and at the same time try to abide by the rules and regulations that are going to be put forth to us. And we truly feel that the bottom line to all of this is going to boil down to common sense and the personal responsibility of the person that's coming to us. If they've trusted us enough to make a reservation to want to see us at this point in time, we're going to do our very best to make sure that we're safe, our staff are safe, and that the guest remains safe, but still deliver the kind of experience that they've come to know and come to expect.
Brian, we're having this conversation on the cusp of the summer tourism season, but I understand fall foliage is the big kahuna in Vermont. Have you already been getting cancellations for the fall foliage reservations?
We have been getting some cancellations for fall foliage. I will tell you, a good amount of our fall foliage travelers are our repeat guests who do book 2 years in advance. And these are people that truly want to be here. So I know that they're going to wait until the last minute before they do cancel. But I can also tell you that they're the most vulnerable people because most of them are going to be getting on an airplane to get here. And they're also going to be an older demographic, which is, that group of people that are most at risk for being out of their houses. So I do anticipate there's going to be a big hit come fall foliage, and I'm not quite sure that the drive travel can necessarily make up for that.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for calling us and joining in this special. That was Brian Mulcahy. He is the co-owner of Rabbit Hill Inn in Vermont. And Tracy, I want to talk to you about that. Brian Mulcahy mentioned that many of the travelers to his inn are older, but that's really true of travelers throughout New England, isn't it? The people who have the time to travel, who have the discretionary income, are often the very people who are vulnerable to COVID-19.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And, the research that's being done right now is saying that likely the first wave of travelers when we can travel are going to be people doing road trips of less than 100 miles. So that's, not the demographic that Brian just described, and likely going to be probably younger people that feel a little bit more less vulnerable. So they'll be out there traveling. They tend to appreciate lower price points. For the luxury sectors, that's going to be a bit tough. And so our tourism sector might need to pivot a little bit to look at some of these other markets, because people will travel again. We know that. We've seen that after 9/11. We saw it after the financial crisis in 2008. People do end up traveling again. Mm. Usually it's about double the time that it took to kind of crash to come back up. So it's going to happen, but the first sectors are going to be road trips, very small road trips, and probably younger people with families.
Well, Tracy, thank you for that information. This is an America Amplified special about New England's tourism season. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more from you. Welcome back. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm Jennifer Rooks with Maine Public Radio. Today on the program, we are taking calls from around New England about how the region's tourism industry is gearing up for a difficult summer season. Joining me, Jamie Trowbridge, who is president and CEO of Yankee Publishing, and Tracy Michaud, chair of the Tourism and Hospitality Program at the University of Southern Maine. We invite you to be part of the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Or send us an email, americaamplified@nepr.net. Again, americaamplified@nepr.net. I'm going to go to an email here from Joan in Maine. She writes, I direct a seasonal house museum on the Maine coast. Our visitors, primarily an older cohort, receive a guided tour. Two-thirds of them come from other countries. The rooms in this old house are too small to allow for social distancing. How can small venues like ours ensure that visitors from outside Maine have complied with a quarantine order? Will testing and contact tracing be ramped up to necessary levels by midsummer? Well, Joan has sent this email just as our governor here in Maine, Janet Mills, has announced that we're going to be tripling the testing very soon because of new testing kits from IDEX. But Tracy, let me ask you about this. These are the very kind of sort of specific questions to each site that the owners and the operators of sites are asking, correct?
Yeah. And what, you know, Joan described is pretty typical of, for instance, the historical societies. We're pretty unique in New England. We have just about a historical society museum in almost every little town. And, you know, it's great, but it makes it really hard to comply with, as she mentioned, social distancing and perhaps even some of the sanitation directives because of the nature of the historic artifacts there. And so, you know, some of the things that I think the industry is going to have to look at in places like the museums is trying to stay relevant through this, through an online presence, for instance, maybe doing some virtual tours, sending those to the lists, you know, that you have of museum lovers and patrons, creating calendars, recipe books, whatever it is that can kind of keep your attraction in the forefront of your patrons and visitors and customers, even though they might not be able to be there in person. I know another thing that would be really appreciated, and this is coming from a mother of three kids, is resources that can be provided to parents that are homeschooling their kids right now. Fun facts, virtual field trips, inspiring videos, anything like that online that parents can use for their kids. Those types of things are going to be so appreciated, and hopefully people will remember that when this is all over and come visit you. So there's some ways that, you know, even though the physical might not be there this summer, you can try to stay connected.
An email here from Amy. I was planning on traveling to three races this summer, a bike race in Vermont, a half Ironman at Old Orchard Beach in Maine, and the Boston Marathon. What are the guests' thoughts on tourism and racing? I have not heard about these events being canceled, but I can't imagine them happening. Jamie, I know that one of the things Yankee Magazine does is keep tracks of all sorts of athletic events throughout New England. What can you tell Amy?
Yeah, and this year we've been hired by the Boston Athletic Association to produce the programs for the Boston Marathon. And as she almost certainly knows, if she was registered to run in April, that race has been deferred till September 14th. But there's still an open question about whether that will be able to continue. I think the BAA is looking at August 1 is the go, no-go date for that. And there's a question also about what that race will look like. One of the races, I think, marathons, I think in Tokyo, they just let the elite runners run as a way of creating social distancing among the runners. But then there's an open question about the crowd. You know, will people stay away from each other as they spectate the race? So lots of unanswered questions. And, you know, so much of this has to do with timing, right? And we all hope that the virus will be brought under control in a short amount of time, and that will give us all the confidence to open things up. But if it lingers into the summer, you know, I think that fall race will be canceled.
On the line now is Ricky Au. He owns four restaurants around Mystic, Connecticut. Ricky, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I understand that you've been able to do takeout and delivery since the pandemic hit. Have you had enough customers? Have you been able to make it work?
Lately, we have. In the beginning, it was a little scary. We were kind of just breaking even, you know, with staff, and definitely we had to, you know, we didn't have as much staff on, and you know, we had to cut overhead and stuff. So, but yeah, it's been a lot better in the recent weeks. But definitely in the beginning was really kind of scary.
I understand Connecticut's governor has set a tentative date of May 20th for restaurants to begin serving people outside at outside tables. Are you planning to do that?
Yeah, the governor has. And we do. And one of our restaurants, we have outdoor dining. But I plan on still doing takeout. But if people are welcome to sit down on our patio, we just won't do table service. I just, you know, don't want to risk, you know, our staff getting anything, and you know, other people as well. So, and if people feel comfortable sitting down, then they're more than welcome. But I don't want to put our staff at risk right now.
So you're not going to have waiters and waitresses come to those tables, but people can sit there if they want to do the takeout.
Yeah, we'll still serve them in, you know, takeout containers, and you know, they're welcome to sit down if they'd like. So,
what is your personal calculation? How will you decide when it's safe enough to reopen your restaurants?
That's a really, really tough question. Right now, I don't know if I have a really good answer for you. I would say when people don't feel as scared to eat out, and you know, the experts say that it's safer to come out, then I guess that'll be time for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It is tough. It's tough. You know, and you know, I don't want to, you know, jeopardize my restaurant or my staff either. But, you know, when people feel like they're ready to come out and eat and feel okay about it, and the experts, you know, that say that, you know, this is okay and this is, you know, how we should do it, then I think that's the time is right.
Ricky, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck to you. That was Connecticut restaurant owner Ricky Au, who has four restaurants in the Mystic area. I appreciate you calling in. We'll go to Karen, who's calling from Castine. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a sea kayak business in Castine Kayak Adventures.
And I should say Castine, Maine. So go ahead, Karen.
Yeah, Castine, Maine. And, you know, obviously this is, you know, we're pretty concerned about this affecting our business. It's not going to be business as usual, but we do really believe that, you know, paddling is a great way to be able to physical distance. You know, certainly my friends and I have been paddling, and we've been staying well 6 feet apart. So we have been given permission at this point to open. We have not opened, and we most likely won't open until June. I haven't determined that. Like the restaurant owner ahead of me, I'm certainly more interested in what the scientists are saying and, you know, following the state mandates. But, you know, we're thinking of doing things slightly different this year. I mean, certainly our business is going to be quite different, especially with out-of-staters not being able to participate until they've quarantined. So will really affect us. So we just really want to find ways to empower our clients to be more independent paddlers. So, you know, I'm kind of going through educating people about more safety gear and doing instruction in small private groups. I'm doing an online video series. And we're kind of looking at possibly creating some self-guided paddling opportunities.
It sounds like you're being really creative in the face of this.
Well, I have to. Yeah. Yeah, and we're looking at possibly, you know, really reaching out to Mainers that are vacationing. I think a lot of Mainers will be exploring places that are near them because they won't be traveling to other places.
Well, Karen, thanks so much for calling in and joining our conversation. Karen's calling from a sea kayaking company in Castine, Maine. Tell me the name of your company again before we say goodbye.
Castine Kayak Adventures. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Wonderful. Thank you, Karen. Joining us now, Coral Aiello, also with a business that has to do with the sea. She is first mate for her father's business, Sarah Star Fishing Charters in Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, Coral. Thanks so much for calling in.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
I understand this is when business should start be picking up for fishing charters. How are your bookings doing? Is anyone booking?
No, actually, our calendar is free and open, which is very unlike how it usually is. It's been very different this year.
Would you be allowed to book?
I guess as of now, we are allowed to take out Rhode Island residents, since that's where we charter from. No out-of-state guests at the moment, so we're still uncertain about when that's going to happen.
Wow. No bookings. How many bookings would you need to have to make it this year? Does it have to be half of your regular season, three quarters?
It would definitely have to be at least half. I mean, normally we have to go almost every single day to keep the business running just because of expenses. So not going at all or going half is definitely going to hurt us a little bit.
I understand you're a college student and that not only is this the family business you care about, but this is your summer job. What are you going to do if you can't make enough money from the chartering business?
I haven't really put much thought into it because I'm hoping that I can maybe get by, and hopefully this will just be a one-time thing and next summer we'll be back in full swing. But I don't know, I might have to start looking at smaller side jobs or, you know, anything just to kind of get by. This is my only job, and I've been doing this for 8 years, so it's a little scary.
Newport, Rhode Island is known for some big festivals, the Newport Folk and Jazz Festivals. Both have been canceled. Tell me about just the talk in Newport. What is the mood in Newport, Rhode Island right now? Are people feeling frustrated and discouraged, or are people feeling as though they're going to try to figure out another way to make this season happen?
You know, the mood in Newport is definitely down. It's kind of depressing there. I mean, the streets are empty. There's no one walking around. Normally this time of year, things would be picking up and, you know, events start happening, and everyone's still kind of uncertain what's going to happen. So, you know, we heavily depend on tourism in Newport. So we're very just unsure how this is going to turn out, and, you know, hoping for the best, but, you know, expecting the worst.
Well, Coral Aiello, thank you so much for calling in. It's great to have you on the program. Coral is first mate for her father's charter fishing company, Sarah Star, in Newport, Rhode Island. If you'd like to join the conversation, we would love to hear from you. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Rachel, who's calling from Stowe, Vermont. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead.
Hi. So I was just kind of questioning, you know, I'm 23. I live in Stowe. For anybody that's been here, they know that's a very hospitality-based town. Most of the business here are all, you know, hotels, restaurants. And in the off-season, it's, you know, pretty quaint. It's like out of a little Hallmark movie. But, you know, I pay almost $2,000 a month in rent. So my concern, you know, I work at a brewery up here. If once the unemployment and the extra benefits run out, you know, and we don't have that influx of visitors, you know, and it's not just me, it's a lot of people in this town, you know, how are we going to pay our rent or afford to live here if people aren't traveling? And then leading into that, you know, will businesses have enough employees to accommodate once travelers do start coming into town again?
Rachel, that's a very good question. Tracy Michaud, any answers?
I wish I did have the answer to that. You know, we just graduated or about to graduate a whole class of tourism and hospitality students that
are either going out without a job at the moment or have jobs that they need to kind of wait to really start and engage with. And, you know, some of them are looking at maybe this is a time to go on to my master's degree, get a little bit more education. And others are just looking at any part of the industry, any getting a job anywhere. You know, a tourism and hospitality degree gives you great business skills, but and also the added bonus, as anybody knows that's been working in the industry, of having excellent customer service. And so those skills can be transferable anywhere. And so we've been advising to get out and find work anywhere you can and get by, get through this time. And when the hospitality industry comes back, the industry will welcome you back with open arms. But that's the best answer I can give right now. I wish that we knew.
You know, Jamie, Rachel talks about one of the domino effects, the ripple effects of this, what it might do for rents and people able to pay their bills. But then there's the other side of how will towns and states cope with the loss in tax revenue?
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, the ripple effect is the right word. It's going to affect all of us and in the economy. The state of New Hampshire, where I live, depends pretty dramatically. The state budget, I think, is 12% from rooms and meals tax, and that's going to be dramatic. And what's more, kind of rippling on, is the state tourism budgets are tied in New Hampshire to that rooms and meals tax. So all of the promotion that we need to do to get the tourism economy back up and running is going to depend on the states and other organizations having the revenue that they need to do that. And much of it is coming from taxes that they won't be able to collect. The other thing I'll say just in answer to the caller's question is I think there's going to be a calculation that all these tourism properties have to make, and you sort of struck on it with your question to the charter boat operator out of Newport, is, you know, just how much do you need, how much business do you need here to justify even opening?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was on a call with some destination marketing organization representatives yesterday, and then the Evan Smith, who's the head of Discover Newport, you know, when he heard about the Maine governor's suggestion that the quarantine was going to be required through July and August, he said, you know, boy, if that happens in Rhode Island, my hotels aren't even going to open.
Well, we do need to go to another break. More conversations about New England tourism. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. Welcome back. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm Jennifer Rooks with Maine Public Radio. We are talking about the impact that the coronavirus crisis is having on New England's tourism industry. My guest, Tracy Michaud with the Tourism and Hospitality Program at the University of Southern Maine, and Jamie Trowbridge with Yankee Publishing. Join our conversation because we're taking calls from all over New England. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can also send a brief, please brief email to americaamplified@nepr.net. Again, americaamplified@nepr.net. We'll go to Lauren now, calling from Hillsborough, New Hampshire. Hi, Lauren. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to touch on what someone had said about short trips, you know, by car. I'm in New Hampshire, as you said, and I've never been to Acadia. So one of the things we thought about was, you know, starting with the national parks and just going camping. You know, we We thought that that would be a great idea in terms of social distancing. But then, as the gentleman from Yankee Magazine had said, you know, when they talk about quarantining for 2 weeks, if you're from another state, you know, we're just from New Hampshire going to Maine. If you're going to quarantine for 2 weeks, there's no point in going at all because that's the whole vacation. So
sure, Lauren. And, you know, I think you've hit
really
the nail on your
about that.
Yeah, a lot of people in Maine are talking about that right now. Jamie, I want to come back to you about that. Is Maine alone in having a, at this point at least, looking at having a summer in which there are going to be quarantines for people coming across state lines?
I don't think Maine will necessarily be alone, but Maine's the only one that's spoken about, the Maine governor's the only one that's projected out as far as she has. And, you know, I think she said, you know, we're anticipating that in July and August, you know, the lodging properties can be open, but people from out of state need to quarantine for 2 weeks. And so by putting that out there so early, she opened up this conversation in a way that it hasn't been taking place in the other states. And also, I learned from the Lynn Tillotson, who runs the Portland CVB, that it resulted in a whole bunch of cancellations at Maine properties. So I think this quarantine question is going to be one that all the governors have to deal with. But at this time, Maine's the only one that's projected so far out in time.
All right. And Tracy Michaud, here in Maine, at least, the governor now has convened a big group of people to give her advice. And there is a chance that this could change.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really dedicated, smart people working on this day and night. And I know the goal is to be able to lift that quarantine, but the public health solution needs to be there first. And that's what they're working on. If testing and antibodies and parameters can be put in place to invite in visitors safely, then I think everybody wants to see that as the solution. The quarantine is, in my understanding, the last sort of worst case scenario, and that's where we're at now. But the hope is over these next couple of months, other solutions can be found so we can invite people in. Because as the caller said, our national parks, for instance, and in general, most of New England, the rural areas, are great places to social distance. They're already known to be clean and fresh air and lots of open spaces. And so that bodes well for us being a place people will want to travel when they can. And I just want to go back a second when we were talking about the businesses, the small businesses figuring out if they can open, and say that the small business development centers that we have in Maine, but most states have an equivalent type of center, are there to help small businesses figure out those questions. And so I would encourage, in whatever state you're at, look for your small business development centers or any equivalent organizations. And that's what they're there for. It's free. You go and you talk to them. They can help you figure out your finances, your plan for going forward. And I, at least, you know, with the organization in Maine, they are ready. They've been hiring people so that they can help our small businesses. So there are some resources out there, and people, they want to help mm-hmm. and help you figure it out.
Calling in now, Kim Hall. She is a potter and co-owner of Scargo Pottery and Art Gallery in Dennis, Massachusetts. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
I understand your pottery studio is a tourist destination in Cape Cod. Tell us what you make and why people come.
Well, we have an outdoor gallery, open-air gallery, which we're going to have that posted out on the street on our sign, hopefully to attract people who can social distance in the environment where they can still see pottery, buy pottery, so forth. We make castle bird feeders, pagodas. We make, you know, mugs and dinnerware sets. There's three main potters that own the business that are here, and then we have an internship program where we have people interested in pottery who work with us over a long period of time. They get to sell their work in exchange for helping us with our chores.
Tell us some of the changes you've seen. You've seen some changes in what people are ordering this season, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, usually I do a lot of wedding plates, anniversary wedding plates, birth plates, things like that. I did get an order today for an anniversary plate, but there's no weddings. And that's going to affect the Cape greatly because a lot of destination weddings happen in this beautiful location of Cape Cod. So, yeah, that's one thing that's slowed down. I'm planning on doing a lot of garden sculptures. I have these beautiful head planters that I'm making and doing things for the yard, bird feeders, bird baths, bird feeder castles, that type of thing.
And that's because so many people are gardening now, correct?
I think that's true. We're all home. We're all in our yards. And why not make them more and more beautiful?
So, and unfortunately, I understand you've had orders for urns in ways that you haven't in the past.
Yes. I'm looking at 4 urns sitting on my bench. We work one-on-1 with clients to make urns, and we've made quite a few of them, yeah.
What is your hope for this season as we, you know, thread the needle, try to navigate balancing keeping employees safe, keeping tourists safe, but also staying in business?
Yeah, well, basically, I'm not planning on, my hope is to just keep the business going. My father started this business in 1952, 68 years ago, and we're just hoping to keep it going. That's our plan, just to keep it going. Maybe not make a big profit this year, or actually any year. It's an art gallery. It's run, you know, by the skin of our teeth most of the time, but we all love it, and we're just hoping that this summer people still come. I have a cottage I rent as well, and I haven't gotten any cancellations on the cottage, and I haven't rented all summer. So hopefully we'll do okay with our outdoor gallery, and we have a wonderful base of customers that come see us every year and have for a long, long time.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for calling in. Kim Hall, co-owner of Scargo Pottery in Dennis, Massachusetts. And Kim, I have to say, I went on the internet to look at some of your bird castles, and they really are quite extraordinary. I would highly recommend that. I'm going to go to Kate, who's calling from Dummerston, Vermont. Hi, Kate, go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great.
So I was just calling because I've been listening, and I really respect, as a resident, lifelong resident of New England, the most of my life in Vermont, the importance of the tourism industry and maintaining the fragile economy up here. But also as a nurse at a hospital in New England, I really implore the governors of the states of New England to follow suit with Charlie Baker and mandate mask wearing in public. It's been really concerning to me just to see the lack of restrictive measures being put in place as we're sort of lifting some of our precautions. And I really worry about what happens with a second wave of this and how that also in turn impacts our economy.
Right. Well, Kate, thank you so much. And your phone dropped out a little bit. So right when you were saying that you're a nurse. So that is what you said, correct? Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much for your call and your concern. And Jamie, she talks about a potential second wave. A lot of people have been talking about a potential second wave of COVID-19, which, of course, would be devastating in terms of public health, but also in terms of the leaf peeping season come October.
Yeah, I mean, summer and fall are the big seasons in New England. And as you go further north in New England, fall becomes even more important. I wouldn't say beyond comprehension, but, you know, I think people are fearful to even think that far forward and to think that we would be locked down at that time. As the caller pointed out, it's just so important to the success of our entire economy that we contain the virus now, even if it means we can't reopen the economy as quickly as we'd like.
I'm going to go to Leanne, who's calling from the New Hampshire Seacoast. Hi, Leanne. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, how are you? Thanks for holding this event for us.
Of course.
I was calling in to try and get some kind of idea of when, like, Airbnbs could open on the Seacoast. I have a couple of rental apartments, and from what I know, the governor said that through the end of May, that I'm only allowed to have essential workers staying in the place, or, you know, people that are maybe got burnt out of their home. There's some, but it's a small, it's not vacation related, which my big season's coming up, and you know, I'm worried about people not making reservations and people canceling the reservations, and was wondering if anybody had any idea about that.
Tracy, do you have any guidance for a New Hampshire Airbnb owner?
Well, I mean, I think at this point we have to just follow what, you know, the government mandates in each of our states, and knowing that, you know, the states are working together to try to kind of cooperate and collaborate so that openings can be beneficial but yet still protect public health. There has been, when it does happen, though, there has been some research showing that travelers, about 25 to 40% are going to change their destination, change their transportation there, and change the type of accommodation. And a lot of them are going to look to apartment-type rentals that they can be in charge of kind of wiping down, and that no strangers are going to be around and whatnot. And so there's, you know, there's some hope there that going forward, when it actually does open, if you have an Airbnb that is for, you know, a single person or single family, not shared, those might be in popular demand going forward. So something to keep in mind, that people want to have control over their surroundings in order to travel because of, you know, everything going on around them. And so when it does happen, these are the types of markets you might want to kind of look at. How can you make sure and emphasize your cleanliness to people, and that they are going to have control over the space they're going to be living in to keep it clean?
Leanne, thanks for your call, and good luck to you this summer. We're going to go to Fred, who's calling from Wallingford, Connecticut. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. We have a family cottage in Bridgeton. And so staying quarantined for 14 days isn't particularly an issue. But I'm wondering if the quarantine, two things. What's the likely attitude of the locals when they see a car driving around from Connecticut? And are we allowed during that 14 days to go grocery shopping?
All right. Well, Fred, I know that our governor would say two-week quarantine does not include grocery shopping. She has said in news conferences in the past couple of weeks she hopes people bring provisions with them. And I think this question, Jamie, that Fred is asking about Bridgeton, Maine, is also a question that somebody from Massachusetts or Connecticut could be asking about places in Vermont and New Hampshire as well. What is the attitude of the locals towards people coming from more populated states to their community?
Well, as you can imagine, it really varies, but it doesn't take too much hostility from the locals to be really off-putting to the traveler. And, you know, I know that, for example, in Rhode Island, they were literally stopping cars with out-of-state license plates at the border and asking and interviewing those people. And, you know, in a tourism environment, that's not very welcoming.
That's right.
So, you know, I think it's going to be really important to the folks that are talking about reopening and making those plans, like that committee in Maine, and I know we have one here in New Hampshire, that they're working just as much on sort of the public relations piece of this, and working on making sure that the local folks feel safe as they are on making sure that the visitor feels safe, so that the whole system, ecosystem, works together.
Thank you so much, both Jamie Trowbridge and Tracy Michaud, for joining us today for this special. Jamie Trowbridge, you just heard, president and CEO of Yankee Publishing. Tracy Michaud is with the University of Southern Maine's Tourism and Hospitality Program. I thought I'd end with a email from Gregor Clark, who's a Vermont-based travel writer who writes for New England Hiking Guides for Lonely Planet. And Gregor writes, I agree that outdoor activities away from urban areas, but with in easy driving distance of New York, Boston, and Montreal, will be one of the first areas of tourism to return. Here's hoping. I'm Jennifer Rooks from Maine Public Radio. This has been an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. This show is part of a series of regional specials. Next Thursday, join WCAI on Cape Cod to continue exploring the impact of coronavirus in New England. We'll look at the growing tensions between year-round residents and people from away. We want to hear from you. Email a voice memo to americaamplified@nepr.net. Our program was produced by Cindy Hahn, Jonathan Smith, and Morgan Springer. John Dankowski is the executive producer. Special thanks to engineers Lucy Suchek and John Keimel. Vanessa De La Torre is the executive editor of the New England News Collaborative. America Amplified and the New England News Collaborative are made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.